All right, welcome. Oh, I almost said welcome to Reform Jog. I do that all the time. Welcome to How to Build a Tent. My name is Matt Williams. I am joined by Marcus Pittman. How are you doing today, Marcus?
I'm doing good, man.
We're both part of the Fight Laugh Feast Network.
We are.
If you want to support us, if you want to support people that are putting out amazing content, which is what we're going to talk about today, if you want to support people that are proclaiming the Lordship of Jesus in every area of life, go over to flfnetwork.com, put in the show code. What's your show code? Law and Profits?
How to Build a Tent.
No, it's Law and Profits, isn't it?
It's LAP, yeah.
LAP.
Yeah, LAP, yeah.
That's way better than How to Build a Tent. Go to flfnetwork.com, put in LAP, support us as we proclaim the Lordship of Jesus in every area of life. I'm so excited to have Marcus on because we got in a little Twitter fight
a couple days ago. What was it about? I forget. We get in fights.
Oh, it was about should social media sites get in trouble for what they're doing, basically.
Oh, we should have that conversation here for a minute.
All right, let's do that.
All right. So the question is about publishing versus platform.
I'd frame it like this. The question is, how much protection should the government give social media sites?
Well, I believe in a free market, so I don't think they should be involved at all.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So that's the position I was arguing from.
Yeah.
When we look at Twitter and Facebook, and everyone's like, oh, we need to break up the monopoly. And it's like, no, we don't break up. That's awful.
Yeah.
And then, because you always have those people that are like, oh, we need to break up the monopoly and we need to force all these government regulations because we don't have a true free market. And it's like, well, yeah. Why don't we just say, we should have a true free market and just argue from that presupposition and not become socialists in our thinking because we have a socialist system.
Right.
So with the issue of publisher versus platform, mm-hmm. It's like a phone company cannot be charged for something someone says on the phone.
Correct.
Because they're just essentially a platform. But whereas the New York Times can be sued for libel because of something that they publish. So I would argue that if the New York Times publishes something that is libel, you should sue the person that wrote it. And on Twitter, that's still true. Like, you can still sue someone for libel if they post something on Twitter that's libelous.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, so those protections are already there. So my position is essentially that because there is no neutrality, when you talk about publishers versus platforms, there is no neutrality. Like, even Facebook bans pornography.
Right.
So essentially, they're not a platform just based on that alone. They're banning pornography. And so because of neutrality, that poses a question. If I have a Christian platform and I want to ban Muslims, mm-hmm. can I still be a platform or am I a publisher at that point?
Mm-hmm.
So well, there's always going to be some sort of editing.
Oh, of course there is. And I think it's it goes into detail, and we're not going to get into this because it's super boring, but there are like certain case laws and kind of framed about what there is that you're allowed to without breaking the law to become a publisher mm-hmm. versus a platform. And I agree with you. I think in the perfect world that individuals should be held accountable and that's it, but that's not the world we live in today. And so I think with existing laws and how it is, when you are going to act like a New York Times, then you need to be treated by law like a New York Times, unless you're going to act like the internet company that's streaming this right now or the phone company that's on the
Yeah, that's why I'm a presuppositional in everything I do, Matt.
I noticed.
I don't argue from the way the world is.
Yeah.
I argue from a post-millennial, this is the way it's going to be one day. So we need to we need to argue.
And that's why you've lost your hair already, and I still got mine, because you're so aggressive about that stuff.
I am so aggressive about that.
So two different sides, but you know what I love is that we can have these debates and not get all butthurt about it. Like,
that's right, man. I didn't even remember the debate. That's a funny thing. Like, most of my Twitter debates, I don't remember. And people come to me and go, hey, man, I really want to apologize for, like, this conversation we had on Twitter a year or two ago. I'm like, Twitter. That's all you do on Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. And then you forget about it or your life is ruined. So you need to figure out how to cleanse yourself of the Twitter, Twitter toxins. Yeah. So I wanted to have you on, though, because you're doing something really great, really interesting.
Yes.
And it comes from a place Maybe we'll wait for that. And it comes from a place of need because Christians produce a lot of terrible content. And we need to talk about that for a second because that is strange to me. It's not unusual. It's not surprising, but it's very strange to me that Christians that worship the true and living God who's created this world, who has empowered us with the Spirit, empowered us with skills and gifts, and we're believing that we are here to be ambassadors for him, we make such garbage. We do it with art. We do it in business. We're terrible business people too. I don't understand it.
Right.
What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think what we can see is that there's a monopoly on the Christian film industry. I think that's the first and foremost. So there's two major companies, VidAngel and PureFlix, and they essentially run the entire narrative of this is what Christian film is. And instead of opening that up, like let's say Netflix has sort of different genres, right? You have horror and then you have drama and comedy, and then you have documentaries and then docuseries and all these sort of things. And each film is its own different film, its own distinct film. Within Christian film, what happens is all the genres, whether it's action, adventure, or drama, all of those genres are under the category of one genre, which is Christian film. So they all have that hallmark sort of feel to it, and that's on purpose. I think it's on purpose.
Right.
I think the reason they do that is because probably there's a lot of funding from Hollywood, and they're trying to keep a clear distinction between this is Christian media and this is Hollywood.
Just like Christian music, it all sounds the same.
Right. So yeah. So you had country music and Christian music. They were together. They were the same. And then they wanted to start singing about bars and dating women and stuff like that. And they were like, well, that just completely disenfranchises our Christian audience. So what they did was all the Christian music people went to Franklin, Tennessee, which we had the Fight Left Peace conference at. I made a tweet about Franklin, Tennessee in regards to this. And some people were like, is that about the Fight Left Peace? No, it wasn't about the Fight Left Peace conference. It's about all the Christian media moved to Franklin, Tennessee. And that's where, you know, K-Love and like all these sort of organizations started. And their goal was to create and define and put boundaries on what Christian music is so that it doesn't take from country music profits. And then what happened was Christian hip hop. And then it was like, oh my goodness, like this is making a lot of money. Christian hip hop is making a lot of money. And none of our radio stations can play this music because it's not within the genre. You can't play Christian hip hop on a praise station.
Right.
And so then they created Air One, right? K-Love created Air One. And then, you know, they immediately got that institution. And then Lecrae was like, man, I'm not playing this game. And then he left and then went the social justice route. But I supported him when he initially left because I thought, that's exactly right, man. Like they're trying to categorize him and he doesn't want to be categorized like that. He just wants to be a hip hop artist. He doesn't want to be in the, you know, a certain retail shelf in the bookstore. So I think the same thing is happening with Christian media, and the internet has not been utilized in such a way as to disrupt that yet. And that's what we're hoping to do with Lore.
So how high, very high level, because I know a lot of it is still under wraps, but how is that going to happen?
Primarily by empowering artists to love God and make what they want.
So it's a hands-off approach, not a producer. I'm going to be in there and like producing everything you're doing. It's going to be, you're an artist, go be an artist.
Right. Well, HBO still has very high level production. But for the most part, once they hire the director and the producer and showrunner, they give them tremendous amounts of creative freedom that most other networks don't allow.
Yeah.
And then they use that freedom for pornography, which is weird.
Yeah.
but you know, out of the abundance of the heart, right? So yeah, they give them that freedom, and then that's what they create. But I think you don't see that. I was actually watching a video. It was an unbeliever, and it was about the new The video was called The Christian John Wick Ripoff That Nobody Wanted. And it's about PureFlix's new John Wick ripoff called Beckman. But he actually goes into a lot of the problems in this video with like why Christian media is, you know, you have this, the director, the cinematographer, the filmmaker, all these people are the same person. And sometimes that's okay. But it's not okay if it's very restrictive in terms of what, like the boundaries on what that one person can do with the film. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of discussion,
hands-on micromanaging,
micromanagement from the top, yeah, and stuff like that, that always makes it terrible. So that's, I would say, at a very high level, we've been saying, love God and make what you want. And I'm gonna tell you, man, you know, just saying that has sent shockwaves through people. We've gotten very incredibly talented artists that works for very high level companies in secular media that are being pressured to create this social justice sort of narrative and all this stuff. And they're like, what are you guys doing? Because I've been thinking about just driving an Uber and supporting my family. But what are you guys?
Wow.
And so just like laying that out there and saying, look, just make what you want, like, has already got us talent that we thought we would have to work really hard to get a year or two from now. And they're already like, so what do I got to do?
Man, that's amazing.
So I think that's a strategy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, just trust the Christian worldview. If they have the Christian worldview, then they're going to make stuff that's really great. And, you know, because that's what Christians do.
Yeah. And that's great, because I feel like, I don't know if this is just because of the product of there's just a small select group of people making the same stuff. But to me, when I watch a Christian movie, and it's very few and far between because I can't take it most of the time, it feels like this is our last shot to get the narrative out that you need to love Jesus and that it's all about Jesus and it's a Christian film. And they don't think about, well, we're going to be building a culture and we're going to be building, you know,
well, it's okay to be all about Jesus, Matt.
I know it is, but it just seems like this is our one shot and we're never going to get a shot again to make another movie. So we really need to drive home it's about Jesus, instead of subtlety and using different like literary devices or whatever that's called.
Or just saying, if the artist is giving true freedom and he's truly a Christian, then those sort of narratives and messages and themes are going to come out naturally in the context of his story device.
Absolutely.
And so I remember listening to a Christian filmmaker, and he makes really terrible Christian films. And he was saying that, well, people always complain because I'm preaching to the choir, and my films are preaching to the choir because only Christians watch them. And he's like, well, there's unsaved people in those choirs. You know, it's just like, yeah, but like, you just like reduced your audience size tremendously by even like, you know, just embracing that is just silly. But, but I think, you know, if you actually look at through the history of Christian television, you have, let's take one example. Well, one Christian film, Ben-Hur, right? For sure, a Christian film. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the most successful movies ever made. And then you have, in terms of Christian television, I mean, even like Franklin Graham, Billy Graham, like in the 50s, had really widespread mainstream appeal. And then when you come to like more modern times, like VeggieTales is the most successful animated series of all time, except for Pokemon, which was international, right? Mm-hmm. So Pokemon had an international audience, which makes it automatically bigger. But right under that is VeggieTales. Yeah. Right. So there is and you know, Phil Vischer of the 90s is better than Phil Vischer right now, obviously.
Oh, I know.
But
there's a whole Newsweek article about that.
That classic VeggieTales sort of just, wow, this is really good. These songs are really good. I really like the adults would watch it with the kids.
Yeah.
And there wasn't like this sort of like, oh, I'm being forced to watch VeggieTales again, you know?
Right.
But in terms of proving the market, we know that that's the market is there. The money is there. People are willing to spend money on these sort of things. And then, you know, Passion of the Christ is the highest grossing R-rated film of all time.
Right.
At least I think domestically, maybe not internationally, but at least domestically, the highest grossing R-rated film, $631 million internationally on a $30 million budget.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And the result of that by Hollywood, by the way, wasn't we should make more films. It's like, we better call this film anti-Semitic and slander Mel Gibson and make sure that these sort of films don't take away from what, you know, our agenda, which is, you know, ultimately, I think we see the agenda is cuties.
Right. Exactly. Right.
Like, that's a true agenda. That's what they want. And so they're willing to fight for. So in terms of a market, we know the market's there.
Yeah.
And we know that when the content is legitimately good, that market actually jumps Christianity into the mainstream culture. Like VeggieTales, I worked at Chuck E. Cheese and they were playing VeggieTales on the TV, like the silly songs. They weren't the Christian like songs, I don't think. Maybe there might have been a few, but like for the most part, it was just the silly songs. But there was a licensing deal from Chuck E. Cheese to VeggieTales. Like, that's tremendous. Like, you think about that now, like, would that would probably never even happen. Well, I mean, I think Chuck E. Cheese.
Well, no, I think it does happen in some senses with like N.D. Wilson with Hello Ninja on Netflix.
Well, yeah, right. Absolutely. Yeah, right. So,
yeah.
So obviously, I think that's one of the things we're trying to prove, even, you know, without lore as a whole, is that there is money and there's talent available to do these things. You just need people that's just going to gather everybody and say, let's do it. And so that's essentially what we're trying to do.
That's
so
great. And what I love about it is it's very dangerous to the world and it can be very effective when it's done right. And I was thinking about it. I was thinking about the Hello Ninja story as you were talking about this. I remember because Hello Ninja is written by N.D. Wilson and it does have Christian elements and themes in it, but it's not banging the cross over your head every episode. And so you have people. I never forget this.
Which
I retweeted.
Fine, by the way, as long as it's done well.
Exactly right. Yeah, yeah. I'm not against it. I'm just saying not everything has to be that every time.
No, not at all. No way.
But on Twitter, I shared that my kids love it. My son loves it and wants to watch it all the time. And I got someone to retweet it saying, yeah, we need more seasons. And I went and clicked on her profile and she was a social justice warrior who was anti-Christ. And like the most, if knew who actually made this, would never watch it again. But that's the danger, is that this media and these messages and the themes of Christianity that just flow out of Christian filmmakers, even though it's not beating you over the head, is infiltrating secular households, opposed to the other way around, where Game of Thrones is infiltrating Christian bedrooms and houses.
Now Lord of the Rings will do that with Amazon too. So
no, yeah. Well, there you go. But so there's a cultural battle happening, and media is very effective of penetrating the enemy gates.
Well, liberals do that. I mean, right? They do that with Sesame Street, right? Yeah. Like Sesame Street puts all those sort of inclusive values on everything they do. In fact, you know, Sesame Street is funded by PBS, government funded, and they actually have very strict standards every year that they receive from the federal government in order to write the script. So Sesame Street is teaching your children what the Department of Education wants you to know.
It's propaganda for sure.
It is propaganda. So everything is every film is propaganda for something. Like you said, there's no neutrality there.
Right.
And so the thing is that, but then when it comes to Christian film, like, it's not really propaganda. It's just obvious Christian film. And you're like, well, that's only certain people are going to watch that. And that's what happens. But even when only those certain people watch that, say God's Not Dead cost $2 million, but it got $60 million in the box office.
Yeah.
Right. So you have to ask yourself, well, why, if these films are so bad and everybody would agree that they're bad, if they're so bad, why do they make so much money? And it's because, you know, it's selling bottles of water in the desert, or, you know, urine in the desert, really. And people are like, yeah, I'll take it, right? Yeah. so because it's all, there's a monopoly on the industry.
Yeah, and there's a hunger Christians are begging for good Christian content. They're begging for the movies to be made, and that's all they get. So they have to drink the urine. And so
Laura, it's the yellow taxi cabs.
Yes.
Right. So there's yellow taxi cabs. Everybody has a yellow taxi cab. Everybody has this medallion system. And then Uber comes around and says, yeah, what if like anybody could just pick someone up and take them somewhere? Like, why does it have to be a yellow taxi cab? Why can't it be your own, you know, Honda? Yeah. And they disrupted the entire system. So that's sort of the same thing with Lore. Just disrupt the system, break up the monopoly. And then, and we've already seen, fear, from these sort of organizations. So that's pretty exciting.
Cause that's we're just when you know you're onto already. Something.
Yeah. Yeah. So
very exciting. Okay. So let's do some linking. Where can people find out more or follow support Lore right now and in the future?
Yeah. So if you go to lore.tv, LOOR.TV, you can join the email list right now is what we have. There's a promo video up there. Kind of gives you an idea of kind of where we want to be at our turn. Our sort of market niche is in that video, but you can subscribe as an investor, or just say you're interested in subscribing once it comes out. And then, so we're building that email list. And then if you sign up for the investment list, I can send you send me a private message or there's an email on the website. If you send an email, I can send you a link to our pitch video that we did, the other night.
You need to send me that link too, by the way.
Oh yeah. I'll send it to you, man. I'll send it to you. Are you on the investor email list?
No.
Well, that's why you didn't get it, man.
I know. I'm sorry. You keep this so secretive. I didn't even know where to go until just now.
Yeah. Yeah. So LOOR.TV, and you can join the investment list, and then you can join the subscriber list.
I'll put the link in the show note. Is there any requirements to an amount? We already got 1,000
people signed up. You know, awesome. That says they'd be interested in being a subscriber. So.
I get a lot of emails about looking for investing and supporting Christian things. And obviously, this is a good one to do. And you should, if you're still looking for investing, do it. Mm-hmm. Is there any requirements for investment? Well, can someone come in with, hey, I have $1,000?
So we're actually about to launch. Yeah, that's a good question. We're actually about to launch a WeFunder, which is essentially crowdfunding for investments, which is, first off, a miracle that we even got accepted. It's awesome. And we're very happy that we got accepted to be on the platform. They don't accept anybody. So they have to look through the pitch, look through the plan. And there's like this accounting and CPA sort of certifications, all this sort of stuff in order to get accepted. And we got accepted to be on that platform, which is a big deal because that's going to bring a lot of eyes to like some major VCs and stuff that scout out that program looking for that. So that's exciting. But it also allows for people to be able to donate $50 or $100 or invest $50 to $100. Mm-hmm. So that'll be really however that's set up, and it handles all the legal sort of contract signing and stuff through the platform, does all that stuff too. So that'll be on WeFunder. Hopefully we'll be able to launch in the next week or two, officially launch on there. And that's depending on, you know, their verification processes and stuff like that. But.
So I'll go back. This show is going to come out Monday, and so it'll probably be a couple weeks. I'll go back and put it in here. But also follow Marcus Pittman on the social media sites, because I'm sure he's going to share it there. Where can they find you on the social media sites?
Well, Watch Lore.
Watch Lore.
Twitter, okay. Instagram, and Facebook. And then I am King Ginger on Twitter.
All right. So that's great. And then Law and Profits comes out, I don't know, Tuesdays, Wednesdays?
Well,
some days.
Here's the thing. we're moving to Moscow, Idaho, so everything's kind of just
in flux.
Nuts. And then once I get settled in Moscow, Idaho, we're going to get on a much more continual schedule with Law and Profits, which I'm actually excited about. I'm actually thinking about sort of changing the structure of the show and being a more Joe Rogan sort of interview thing.
Ooh,
so if I can get the time and like Me and Knox are talking about. So that's the plan. Is if I can get the time and figure out the guests, like getting the guests on the that'll commit to come on the show, I think that'll be a lot of fun. So.
Oh, that will be great. Look forward to that. Marcus Pittman from Lore, thank you, and Law and Profits, and Fight Laugh Feast Network, and 1,000 other things. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Matt.